Welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm Robert Holly with Home Healthcare News. Before we jump into my conversation with LifeSpark CEO Joel Tyson, who's betting big on value-based care and Medicare Advantage, I want to give a shout-out to our podcast sponsor, Homecare Homebase. Its powerful, cloud-based home health software streamlines virtually every aspect of your business. Spend less time on paperwork and more time delivering quality care to the patients who need you. Visit hchb.com to learn more. Based in the Minneapolis area, LifeSpark is rapidly emerging as one of the more innovative home-based care providers around, doing non-medical home care type services and primary care, basically anything to help advance its holistic approach. You may have heard of the company before, as LifeSpark launched its HomeSpire joint venture with Utah's Intermountain Healthcare last year. HHCN caught up with CEO Joel Tyson to hear about his plans for LifeSpark and HomeSpire, and how home care providers can't afford to stay in their lanes in today's evolving healthcare ecosystem. I'd like to now welcome Joel Tyson, the CEO of both LifeSpark and HomeSpire. Joel, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, Bob. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity and look forward to it.
So I want to kick this conversation off by just going over the basic details and business models of both LifeSpark and HomeSpire, the latter of which is a joint venture with Intermountain Healthcare, one of the largest health systems in the country. But let's start with LifeSpark first. Joel, could you just tell us a little bit about your company?
Yeah, sure. LifeSpark was started in 2004. And just to back up a little bit, this is my third company, if you will. I started with a company that my in-laws started from scratch and took it public in the 80s, which was a general kind of skilled home care and hospice company. And then I did a venture-backed startup around whole person care in California for 7 years and built that up to 5 locations across the country. And LifeSpark is sort of my holy grail company. This one we bootstrapped, started in 2004 with 3 employees and $500,000 to change the world. And basically today we have about 650 employees, and we started with a geriatric care management private pay model, have added on campus services, campus home care services and memory care, then added a skilled home care component, then added kind of a Coleman-esque sort of transition to care model navigation services, and have most recently added primary care services. So we're about a $35 million operation, and we have the freedom to create the future going forward. So really exciting, and have a great team to make that happen. So that's LifeSpark. And our mission quickly is to spark lives. I mean, we're all about, you know, wellness and really have a passion for helping people age magnificently and looking at really breaking the roller coaster of crisis many people get on and focus on what matters to folks. So that's LifeSpark in a nutshell.
And maybe that's good to touch on too. So LifeSpark is actually spelled L-I-F, and I actually lost the spelling bee in high school, so forgive me if I mess up the name here. L-I-F-E-S-P-R-K. Where'd the A go?
That's a great question. We did that on purpose. You asked it. You know, you fell for our trap, Bob. The reason why we have no A is one of our companies was called AgeWell, and it was a really great brand, and we were building it, the brand. And when we wanted to switch it, because we know people don't want to age anything, right? People are kind of anti-aging and all that sticks. When we rebranded the company, instead of putting the A, you know, A is for aging, and aging is irrelevant, right? We're kind of ageless. And so we want to focus on people for what they are and the gifts that they have and the passions that they bring, not on their age. And so that's why there's no A in Spark.
And what about HomeSpire? That's the JV with Intermountain in Utah that you announced in, I think, May of last year.
Yep, correct. And that company, we started out looking at, you know, really Intermountain came to us. They were on the search for more community-based expertise and a senior strategy. As they were thinking about that, they wanted to bring in a geriatric care management and private pay component to their ecosystem. They did not have those services. They obviously have home health and hospice and many, many, many services in that $10 billion system. And as they were looking from East Coast to West for best in breed, they wanted to find the very best. And through my network, they found out about LifeSpark and came to town. And in their due diligence, they were whittling from, you know, 20 providers down to 10, down to 5, down to 3, down to 2. And we were fortunate enough to get the nod to be their geriatric care management / private pay partner. And then in that relationship and in that partnership negotiation, I was really bullish on the fact that, look, we're willing to come to town to do that, but we really want to help more with redesigning a new delivery system with you around seniors. And they love that idea. And so that's really, Homespire is a compilation of the original geriatric care management, private pay services, but really there strategically to help build a community-based network of services and deliver a fully integrated primary care and care delivery system.
I want to spend some time really digging into Homespire for a second, because I think this JV is really reflective of how home-based care is becoming such a cornerstone for health systems across the country. One of the purposes of Homespire, of course, is to keep Intermountain's patients at home, out of their hospitals. Could you just kind of even anecdotally talk about the success that you've seen with Homespire on that front and how the JV has grown since launching?
Yeah, that's great. First, one of the big things about the partnership is, you know, why we really won that deal was the data. You know, they were really big on data and metrics, as you can imagine. And so that was a really big start to that and why they selected us. You know, where the company has been is really looking at, you know, as Intermountain looks at the future and looks at what's important. One thing that many people that are listening might not know is that Intermountain is an integrated payer provider network. So they own their own payer called Select Health. So they have a great ecosystem to deliver on value-based or on longitudinal or long-term outcomes, not just on their kind of beds and heads and, you know, traditional old health system metrics. And so that was really what brought us together. And their intention with Homespire is to meet their mission, which is helping people live the healthiest lives possible. And they mean that. They mean it deeply. And so when they looked at what we were able to do with LifeSpark and what they really wanted was, they obviously have the medical care and medical services and chronic care management and care management down pretty well. But what was sort of missing is that community understanding and architectural understanding of how other providers work in the system, and ultimately what drives value, and they understand it intellectually and also from a payer standpoint, is the social determinants of health. And a lot of people are talking about that now, Bob, as you know, the social determinants of health is kind of becoming a buzzword.
I've never heard that word once, just kidding.
Right. But it's kind of a buzz, but with what we're doing around whole person, looking at that whole person and meeting them where they're at, which is what we do in home care and community-based services, was really seductive in tying together a lot of these different services to create that long-term or longitudinal relationship and build trust over time to build and deliver on kind of some of the tough stuff around behavioral health and around, you know, the psychosocial aspects of well-being. And so that's really been the exciting part. And to answer your last part of that question was, where is it going and where are we at now? We've been doing incredible things with individual clients with the company, with Homespire. In fact, Rob Allen, who's the CEO of the entire architecture of Intermountain, is the chairman of the board of Homespire. Mm-hmm. And two of the probably seven most powerful people in Intermountain are also on the board. So they see this as a very important aspect to their future in community-based services. And where it's going is to really look at value-based populations like Medicare Advantage. And Intermountain has a strategy that they've talked about to you and others might have heard about it called Intermountain at Home. And Intermountain at Home has a bunch of different things, including pharmacology and dialysis and other services. But one of the cornerstones that Intermountain has talked about with others in the media already is that Homespire will be a cornerstone as far as that relationship, that trust building, long-term care management in the community, and delivering a unique value proposition and delivering on triple aim or quadruple aim to redesign the delivery system. And that's what Intermountain is really about. They're about change, disruption, world-class innovation, and we're very fortunate to be in the middle of that with Homespire.
LifeSpark is obviously very good at what it does. You touched on this a little bit with, you know, the data component, but a lot of home care providers would love to have this kind of relationship with a major health system. You know, Intermountain is not small. LifeSpark is based in Minnesota. Intermountain is based in Utah.
How, besides just data, how did you really build this connection, especially, you know, considering that you're 1,200 miles away from each other?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the deal was that they looked at, as we talked about, they were really interested in the data, but beyond the financial performance and demonstrating other metrics and outcomes like rehospitalization rates, ER, keepage, you know, we were able to build the structure. And this is really important for people to hear, is that we were open to do a joint venture, and we thought it was the right way to go, because then there's real vested interest and skin in the game. And so that collaboration got them comfortable with us and us comfortable with them. We didn't want to just come in and be kind of a partner or a preferred provider. It was really about how do we own this entity together and use our best kind of knowledge and best resources to better the design. And so I think that joint venture opportunity and offering that was really big. And then the other thing that tied us together was, you know, we have a pretty deep team of talent, and we have a pretty deep well, you know, around not just the data and the outcomes about rehospitalization, et cetera. But one of the things that we've talked about before, Bob, is we do a lot around the social determinants scoring for our customers, and the promise scoring was really important to them because it was different, right? They have lots of metrics and data that they can get and they have access to. But what was alluring to them and what other providers should be doing now, in my opinion, to win deals with health systems and payers is really making sure they can track and create value around, like we use a promise scoring tool. It's a nationally benchmarked tool around social determinants. There's a few others. But to do that and bring that to the party, bring that to the table, it opens a lot of doors.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to spend all of our time talking about Homespire and Intermountain, because you're doing some really cool stuff at LifeSpark. Not too long ago, you guys announced that you're expanding the home-based primary care offering. What's that expansion look like? And more importantly, why make that move? A move which I think I should point out, you've brought on Bill Thomas to kind of help spearhead.
Yeah, I mean, in all my years, I've been doing this for, I don't know, I think about 25 years now, Bob. What I've learned, you know, working in all types of home and community-based services, you know, I've done skilled, I've done hospice, I've done private pay, you know, I've done assisted living and memory care and, you know, all sorts of different pieces of this. And what I've learned is that, you know, if you really want to get into the major leagues, the client attribution is based on primary care, right? I mean, from a payer perspective, for us to really change the game and be able to serve all people, really, not just private pay people or people that have a certain benefit, you really need to have access or partner or have your own primary care service delivery. And it has to be integrated. You know, primary care, people talk about primary care. And I think when we relate to geriatrics and senior clients, you know, geriatrics is a very unique place in primary care, right? It's a specialty, and there's not a lot of geriatricians or geriatric nurse practitioners out there. So we felt really important strategically for us to design, deploy, and deliver a fully integrated, person-centered medical and social determinant model to create a real system that's integrated. And so that's why we did it. And it also creates the path for us around payment reform to go directly to payers and actually be a delivery system that's an alternative to what I call the sick care system, which is the old medical, you know, that what people call healthcare. So that's really why it's so important. It's important because many of these clients, as we know, are aging. They have many vulnerabilities. They have many comorbidities and chronic conditions that get in the way of their life. And so for us to be successful, we need to keep those at bay so we can focus on purpose, passion, identity, you know, their family, community building. And so that's why it's been so important and so critical for us strategically to have that fully integrated delivery system.
I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole, but here's a question that kind of just popped into my mind. Any thoughts on the Primary Cares First initiative that HHS and CMS announced? I think it was a month or two ago now. That's the initiative that would create 5 new value-based payment models through 2 main pathways for primary care. It seems like LifeSpark would be really well positioned to somehow capitalize on that, though I know that the details are sparse at this point.
Yeah, I mean, my quick reaction probably is like most people on this call is, I love it. I mean, I love the opportunity to put the opportunity for community-based providers like ourselves, all of us, you know, that are probably listening, in a position to really create a different business model and, most importantly, a different experience for those that they serve. So I love the fact that they're opening up CMS and, you know, and payers are opening up the playground, if you will, to say, look, what we're doing obviously is not working, right? I mean, we have 19% GDP, we have high rehospitalization rates, you know, high ER admissions. We're not creating, you know, real great outcomes across the board. Payment, you know, for like, if you know about Medicare Advantage and medical loss ratios and kind of how that works, you know, they're upside down. People are spending more than they expect. This opportunity gives every one of us out there a chance to start to build our own delivery systems around our architecture. And so I think it's a very important and very opportunistic time. In fact, in my entire career, I think I'm more excited now about things like that, as well as like Medicare Advantage and SNPs, even though they're challenging to deploy, I-SNPs, D-SNPs. These are all opportunities that are opening up and saying to us as providers, saying, hey, look, you guys are close to the customers. You guys are the ones that are in front of them most of the time. You're in their homes. You're in their lives. You know them. Do something about it, right? So they're, you know, it's just hanging there for us to take advantage of.
Let's dive into Medicare Advantage a little bit. I want to revisit something that you said during our Capital Plus Strategy Forum in Washington, D.C. back in April. At that event, you were a panelist. You said something along the lines of being willing to bet everything you've got on what we're seeing with expanded Medicare Advantage home care opportunities. Do you still feel that way?
Yes. Yes. Luckily, I'm consistent. I feel even every day I feel deeper and deeper, more committed. And, you know, frankly, I personally, in my team, my entire team knows this, and many people that know me in the market know this, that, you know, for me, if this is the opportunity, this is the time for us to take advantage of these opportunities and make it happen for those that we serve, that entrust us to serve. We have to take a stand and we have to break the old architecture. We have to break it. We don't have to just refine it. We have to bust it, in my mind. And so this is the disruption opportunity, and I'm willing to do whatever. I'd rather run our company into the ground, chase, you know, working after the client experience and the full integration of a longitudinal model than provide more transactional, episodic, you know, services. It's just not solving people's real issues. It's not delivering the value that they need and that they want to change their experience and to bring more good into the world. So I'm pretty passionate, as you know, about a lot of things. This one, I'm all in. So I'm still all in. I'm actively betting the farm on not just Medicare Advantage, right? I mean, any value-based opportunity that recognizes, you know, triple aim, quadruple aim, population health is what I and my team are fully committed to, including Bill Thomas that I forgot to mention before. I mean, Bill is not just an optic for LifeSpark. He is an active, engaged partner in designing and leading this delivery system. So, you know, we're engaging ourselves. I'm equally all committed and all in. And if you know Bill Thomas or those of you know Bill, he's pretty much an all-in guy too. So that's where I am. I'm still all in, Bob.
I actually had the pleasure of meeting Bill at our sister site, Senior Housing News' Build event in Chicago. One of these days, I'm going to get out and stay in one of his Minka homes. I want to see what that's like.
Yeah, we're in the process of negotiating bringing a Minka to Minnesota and actually using it as an innovative design center for the future. So not only are we working with Bill on his world-renowned geriatrician, you know, credentials, we're also looking at housing as an important component to the holistic life of folks. And so we're engaged with him on that as well. So you might get to come to Minnesota, Bob, and do it right in our warehouse.
I'll definitely take you up on that.
All right, good.
So also during the Capital and Strategy event in DC, on the panel that you were on, I think there was this conversation about whether or not home care providers should, quote, stay in their lane. And I think our listeners could probably tell that just from what you said so far, you're pretty against that idea. You know, you maintain the mindset of, I think you've said in the past, isolation is fatal. Could you just kind of expand on that idea? Why shouldn't, you know, a home care provider who does home care really well stay in his or her lane?
I think those lanes are like, they're riddled with cement barriers along the way. And what I mean by that is, you know, we all know this, like people that have done home care and that do home care in skilled, for instance, you have an episode of services, you have them for your client for 2 weeks. And as soon as you deal with their symptom management or get them to a reasonable kind of a rehabilitation kind of state, you have to discharge them, right? And then you cross your fingers and hope to God that, you know, they don't fail in the next 2 weeks, or you hope you don't see them back and you don't even know what happens to them. So you don't even really get to go back and do root cause analysis to understand, well, why did they have the fall, or why did they have the exacerbated CHF, or why did they have the stay in the TCU? And so as an example that I'm using here is that myopic view to staying in your own lane does not create a solution, does not create a system of excellence. Atul Gawande, in his book, Being Mortal, if many people have probably read it on this call, talks a lot about systems of excellence. And, you know, I'm just parodying, you know, kind of what Atul Gawande is saying and many others about this isolationist model. We have to be like generalists. We have to be general contractors and people in the community, people in home care, in private pay home care, in hospice, in palliative care, in assisted living, et cetera. We all have the opportunity to really build the trust and, in a sense, you know, be able to be that general contractor for this person longitudinally. And so I think staying in alone is, number one, it's not the best in the best interest of the client. We all talked for many years, the rhetoric, and you probably wrote about a lot of this in the past, you know, the fragmentation of healthcare, right? I mean, it's just so fragmented. We have really bad electronic medical record synergy. We have no integration. All these things create poor outcomes, and that's what we're seeing. So I think staying it alone is a recipe for failure. Now, another track on this around what I believe around why I think isolation is fatal from a monetary standpoint is I feel as we continue, if you do stay in your lane, I believe providers are going to continue to be marginalized. Mm-hmm. Meaning there's going to be margin compression, which there already is in PDGM and skilled, and it continues to be compressed. Hospice is going to get compressed a little bit. I mean, there's a very thin margin, and people complain like there's not enough money, especially in Medicaid and some of these populations where there's just no money to innovate, to invest, to provide better work environment, to provide livable wages. I mean, it's just not sustainable in the sense of where you can actually invest in how to redesign and invest in your workforce. So I think isolation in that respect is also fatal. And the last thing I would say about this, because you got me on a little bit of a run here, is look, we know there's 19% of GDP. There's billions of dollars being spent on healthcare, and it's all going into the acute care bricks and sticks. And I think we need to take some of that money by working together. We need to take some of that money from the acute care side and put it in, instead of a reactive model, in a proactive model, in a community model, and actually fund much more integration. We have to not be afraid to work together. We have to really build around the client, not around our own little ecosystem, not around our financial metrics, not around our environment, not around a disease state. We have to build around a client, and a client doesn't live in 15 days or 30 days cycles.
All right. Well, that's a lot to digest, Joel.
Well, you're touching on these very passionate little sensitive areas, right?
Just a reminder for listeners, we're talking to LifeSpark CEO Joel Tyson, who's also the CEO of Homespire, a joint venture with Intermountain. We have maybe 5-6 minutes left. I want to do a little bit of a lightning round to touch on some broad industry points. In your view, what are the top 2 or 3 challenges in regard to the delivery of home-based care right now?
Yeah, great. I think it's a real little relevant on, is it private pay or skilled or hospice? I mean,
sure.
I guess in general, one of the big ones is everyone knows is really workforce, right? I mean, there's so much we have to do. I mean, the resources are so thin. Most providers are really challenged. And so we need to really build a better and better environment across the continuum for training, development, and really having people want to come into our industry, right? I mean, it can't be like the second stepchild and, you know, everybody races towards, you know, maybe acute care. I mean, we have to make our world attractive and viable and meaningful for people. And so I think one of the biggest challenges is staffing and staff and talent, right? I think another one is regulation, right? I mean, regulation is tough, right? Because the more we keep piling on more and more and more and more regulation, it makes our people on the front line have to work harder and harder and harder and harder with less and less and less and less to be able to give to the clients and those that we serve. So I think another big broad industry you know, issue is really watching the regulation, right? I mean, it's tough. We make it hard for people, and I think we got to be mindful of that. So those are a couple of them. And I third is that margin compression. I think we really got to watch that as a challenge. I think, you know, it's, people talk about PDGM driving a lot of small providers out. That's been talked about, obviously. I think we got to make sure we stand up together and make sure that margin compression doesn't cut us so tight that, you know, we just don't have an ability to create the kind of value we need for those that again, entrust us to serve. So I think, those are just a few quick redraws.
And then on the flip side, I think we've touched on several opportunities throughout this conversation. Any others that are important to highlight? Again, kind of more broadly, not necessarily talking about private pay or Medicare certified home health or anything in particular.
Yeah, I think the big one that we haven't talked about yet is technology. Mm-hmm. I think technology, the timing on technology, I've been watching technology like many people on this call for a long, long time. And it's not technology for technology's sake, but now to integrate technology in a cost-effective, you know, integrated way is super, super important. It's got to be where people are moving their resources and their mind, not only from the standpoint of customer-facing sort of, you know, the Alexas and now HIPAA-compliant and all that, and, you know, all the biometrics and all that stuff. But I'm really even talking more about the data and the analytics and the integration of EMRs, integration with other partners, like I talked about, where that isolation is, where we can de-isolate by working with TCUs and assisted livings and independent housing around being better about creating a universal health record. And, you know, I think technology is the timing for technology in our space in the community and allowing people to be having on demand, you know, telepresence and telehealth is a huge part. Everybody's talking about doctors on demand and, you know, there's lots of models out there now that are making that efficient. We need to do the same thing with other rehab and prohab and nursing and even social connectedness. So I think tech, as you can hear in a big way, is here for us now. And we need to leverage it. It's a great big opportunity.
And just maybe 2 minutes or so, apart from what we've talked about already, what's next for LifeSpark?
What's next is proof. What's really important for us now, Bob, is we've laid down a lot of parts and pieces into an integrated delivery system. You know, we're working with Intermountain, with Homespire in a really cool way. We have a huge deal that we're about ready to announce here in Minnesota with a payer, which is unique and super cool. And it's a matter of now proving efficacy so we can scale. So that's really it for us. I mean, we're laser focused on now delivering the experience holistically that we have always been committed to do to spark the lives, both from a client family perspective as well as from an employee perspective, and hopefully be that catalyst for many people out there on the phone and in the market to look at what we're doing and, you know, helping us with it, you know, being partners as well as maybe copying it and redesigning it and being bold to go after it. So proof is super huge for us right now, and getting the data around the fact that this really does work by working with people longitudinally with a primary care and a social determinant life care approach around life planning and their entire ecosystem, bringing that community together is really big. The other thing for us, what's next is really that tech enablement and scale. So tech, we're investing lots and lots of resources in all the things that I already spoke about to leverage and to create the efficiencies as well as create the experiences that our employees as well as our clients and families need to see their own advancement, their own spark, and their own experience improve. So those are really what's on the short and medium term for us. And we're real excited and confident that we're going to get there.
I think that's the perfect place to wrap up this conversation. That's Joel Tyson, CEO of LifeSpark and Homespire. It's been a pleasure catching up. Can't wait to see what LifeSpark does next. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Bob. And thanks to everybody out there for listening. And I appreciate the opportunity. And let's make this happen. This is our time. So thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com. I'm Robert Holly, and this has been a production of Aging Media Network, Chicago, Illinois.